Okay, so here's part three. And this is, I want to start off saying it's really important to read The Wrong Kind of Green, Cory Morningstar's blog. And most recently, she does something, is this like a partial and very in-depth research explanation, description of something I kept wanting to do before, but maybe I'm too lazy or it just overwhelmed me. But I wanted to describe like what the spectacle actually is physically, how much wire, how much fiber optics, how much plastic, how much, that, because people, there's this idea, and she describes it very well with all the organic metaphors that are used for you, the interface, the cloud, the walled garden. This kind of language is used for the interface experience, the experience in your home as you interface with this with the spectacle network. But in fact, it's and this gives people an impression it's kind of in the air, it's magic, and young people actually have this impression. Older people, watched it be constructed and know better. But it's actually an enormous clamp of metal around the earth, a hunk of metal around the earth. It's the Death Star enclosing the earth. It's enormous. It's really polluting, so that it's actually, it looks like it makes things, environmentally sustainable, but it's the exact opposite. It's an incredibly polluting, labor-intensive method of dispossessing humanity. It's a huge fence. It's a cage around humanity that the ruling class is building to enslave humanity, to enclose them. It's like the Nazis would invade a country, and they would capture people, POWs, or they get Jews or whatever from Germany, and they put them on trains and they ship them to a camp they made with fences around it and soldiers. And instead of doing this, now the camp is being built around people and in people. And that's what the spectacle is. But it's also capital itself, the financial claim. The relation that is capital is abstracted as a claim. And this was, it's very important to understand, to read Marx, actually read Marx. And a lot of people who even, read bits of Marx or the things that are most entertaining or, the most famous parts or commentaries, and they feel they understand Marx, and very often they do, but they haven't actually gotten the details, read the ground up analysis and explanation of what the relation of capital is. And this is very important because even though the classic mode of production that Marx described in Capital is no longer actually the dominant mode of production at the commanding heights of the economy have already transformed, the form of property that is developed in Capital, from feudal into capital, is still with us. It's inherited by the new system, and but it's also being transformed. And that's really important because it has its own within capitalism, which is a political condition, it's situation. It's not a computer program. It's not the matrix. It's not a system. It's a political condition. And within that, there were certain constraints on everybody's action. Class war, class struggle, it's a constraint also. The political arrangements, the social contract, etc. These constraints, create the contradictions that, endanger the ruling class and their property. And they got the power to lead a transformation out of this to secure their property and their power. This is like capital is itself full of contradiction. So actually financialization created new problems especially after 1987 and the creation of the so-called plunge protection, to make sure that capital wasn't destroyed in speculative bubbles and busts. Then they created new problems for themselves. And these got enormous. I mean, I'm going to have to do another episode that just explains what was happening, you know, with the financial crisis, which was created. There was a critical situation, but the actual so-called credit crunch was created. It's a way of knocking over the system, controlled demolition. So they were all set up to benefit from it. Although the truth was that, you know, sooner or later there would be an actual crash. And that's why it was necessary to do that and to transform the financial system as they did. And this program goes back to, you know, 9/11. So anyway, well, I'll just mention that Stephen Gowan's book, The Global Gamble, kind of explains a lot of it. He wrote it in the 90s. Anyway, it doesn't come all the way up to the contemporary situation, and so it's even more interesting for that, and you see what was visible in the moment historically. But the truth is that after financialization, global financialization, end of Bretton Woods, the end of capital controls, you had an extremely unstable system with a lot of players, with a lot of parity, and nobody had enough market power to actually control the market. And you had a series of really catastrophic busts, Argentina, Mexico, Asian tigers, and the financial overlords realized that it was only a random luck, dumb luck, that these big crashes happened, you know, over a year apart or a few years apart. If two medium-sized economies had gone under at once, there wouldn't have been enough financial power to bail them out. And so at that point, they realized they had to do something. And Peter Gowan doesn't really foresee what they will do in his book, The Global Gamble, but you get a sense of what drove the 80s financialization and what their immediate consequences were that led to what's been happening since 2000, since the Bush regime took over in a rigged election, which was a big risk for them. And at the time, we didn't know why they were taking that risk. Everyone was very puzzled, scratching their heads. Why don't they want Gore? Gore would be just as good for the ruling class, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, now we know. After the fact, we saw the events that took place, and we know why they had to have their own hands on all the wheels of government and powers and pardons and et cetera. Anyway, so now we have the transformation of property, of capital claims, of capital itself, via the spectacle. By the spectacle, I'm not just referring to the surface of what we see, you know, and that people often, when they talk about this, they want to concentrate on the individual, you sort of middle-class person who's mesmerized by a screen. The spectacle mostly affects people who never look at it. It's the world system of digitality. Again, that's Jonathan Beller's phrase. And the capitalist image, doubling reality, displacing reality, displacing the struggle of reality into this sort of illusion, you know, of power that, of course, is backed up by military power. And this apparatus is a military machine. It's a war machine. But it appears to, you know, the masses as, virtuality, which is, you know, so that you have some critics. I mean, I was talking to people about the work of Alison McDowell, who does sort of like Corey Morningstar. She compiles a lot of stuff, but she doesn't she's not really like Corey Morningstar, and she doesn't really understand what's happening. And, you know, mostly she's bedazzled by the very thing that she's supposed to critique. So she has people on and they talk about how everything is shifting into the virtual world, as if you could actually have virtual food or virtual homes or virtual plumbing, you know, and there's a certain Philip K. Dick, there's a certain science fiction mentality, magical thinking that makes very little sense, and it's sort of a symptom of some kind of psychosis. When in truth, what's happening is, you know, money. Money, if you go back and you just go, what is this spectacle? What are these screens? What are these images of things that we're seeing? And you can understand them better if you understand it's a high tech, it's an increasingly electronic version of a dollar bill. Like, what is a dollar bill? It's a piece of paper with some writing on it. It's not actually, you know, this is Marx's description of the fetish is really, really important here. Like, a fetish. The reason Marx called, described the phenomenon of capital and capital markets as commodity fetishism. People really confuse what this means. He's taking a crack at Hegel. And Hegel, because Hegel said, oh, look, Africans are really primitive and because they believe in fetishes. Meaning, they believe that some talisman has an actual magic power, right? You have this object, you know, maybe it's a sculpture, and that it could, you know, help you kill an animal for your meal, that it actually has that power. And what Marx was saying is actually, no, you're the fetishist, you, Hegel, you are the one whose whole life is built on fetishes, and that is the fetish of value. That is the belief that, you know, this bottle of boot polish has the power to feed you when you go to the market and sell it. So the fetish powers is the belief in, you know, the inherent market power, social power of commodities. And this is, it's become so naturalized to people that, you know, it's actually, even right now, it's hard to explain to people why this is a fetishism and not actual magic. So the spectacle is the manifestations, kind of really the ultimate form of this fetish. The fetish of claims over natural things.